Welcome to the 300 to 350 show, a syndicated radio programme that campaigns for a safe climate. We're continuing our coverage of the UN climate change talks in Poznan, Poland, where the biggest issue on the table this year is the protection of forests. Deforestation accounts for 18% of global annual greenhouse gas emissions, and a decision was made in Bali last December to do something about it. Unfortunately, most of the proposals so far involve creating some kind of carbon market to achieve this. This strategy risks creating what Friends of the Earth are calling the climate regime's biggest loophole. Here's Joseph Zakune from Friends of the Earth International summing up the problem with what is known in conference speak as reducing emissions from deforestation, or RED.
If we take a step back, first of all, it made sense to include forests in the climate negotiations in Bali last December, because around one-fifth of greenhouse gas emissions are caused from deforestation. But what was very concerning is that almost all of the proposals to reduce emissions from deforestation were around including forests in carbon markets. And this is very concerning because there is a genuine risk that all of these kind of proposals would provide a get-out-of-jail-free card to rich nations. It would allow them to buy their way out of emissions reductions, and it would create the climate regime's biggest ever loophole, and it would remove any environmental integrity from a post-2012 deal. It would mean that forests would essentially be privatized to generate carbon credit, which would then be traded on an international market and would allow rich countries and companies to buy the right to pollute. There are also lots of other concerns around both forest carbon trading and also other proposals that could develop out of the RED proposals, or reduced emissions from deforestation for developing countries. And that is the fact that there is no clear definition of forests. So, for example, it could include plantations. And that would mean that, for example, we could see that RED proposals lead to a massive expansion of monoculture plantations, although monoculture plantations at best include 20% of the carbon that intact forests do. So Brazil's position, for example, at the moment, they're talking about net deforestation. And that probably means that they're designing forest policy to cut down trees and then replace them with monoculture tree plantations.
That was Joseph Zakune, the Climate and Energy Coordinator of Friends of the Earth International, with the audio taken from a Guardian podcast. Another failing of the scheme is that it does nothing to address the drivers of deforestation, such as soya farming for animal feed, crops grown for biofuels, or the trade in logging for timber and paper. Later in the programme, we'll be hearing from Robert Bailey at Oxfam International about how the EU looks likely to agree an increase in targets for biofuels for road vehicles, something which will lead to an increase in deforestation and an increase in greenhouse gas emissions from other land use changes. But first, here's Miguel Lavera from Paraguay, chair of the Global Forest Coalition, speaking on the phone from Poznan. The Global Forest Coalition is an international coalition of non-governmental organisations and indigenous peoples organisations who are involved in international forest policy, and like Friends of the Earth International, have been demanding that forests are kept out of the carbon markets.
You're calling for forests to be kept out of the carbon markets, is that correct?
Yes.
And why is that? What will be the adverse effects if that went ahead?
Well, first of all, RED projects will definitely take place on lands that are being claimed by, mostly by indigenous peoples and local communities. So it's not that they will be, let's say, innocently be implemented in nobody's land. So there are so many claims on land at the moment that I think those issues should be resolved beforehand, before going into new layers of complication and of complexity on land use patterns in mainly developing countries, right? That's on the first point. Secondly, is that we definitely believe that the issue of additionality is not being covered by any of these projects, including particularly those that relate to deforestation. Then the other key issue is that the reductions needed are so much larger than whatever that could be achieved through the RED mechanisms that we do not want to give an incentive to developed countries to lag behind on the commitments they have to reduce emissions on the sources. And one other reason that they added today is that they rejected every mention of indigenous people's rights on the potential resolution on RED being passed by the SAPSTA.
I mean, because this deals with the whole issue of forests, and
yes.
That obviously will affect indigenous peoples very directly, potentially. And is it 60 million indigenous people that depend entirely on forests?
Actually, much more.
Uh-huh.
60 to 80 million live in forests. That's what normally indigenous peoples report. Now, people depending from forests are over 500 million, yeah, depending
right.
on forests, including those that live directly in the forests, you see? So it's a lot more.
And even though you're such a large group of people, you have no formal representation at the summit? You don't uh-huh. play a part as a delegate, for example?
Yeah, no, definitely not. But you're not talking to an indigenous person.
But the fear is that putting forests into the carbon markets would
yes.
increase the monetary value of the forests, and then the ownership of the forests would most likely disappear into the hands of corporations or governments rather than the indigenous peoples that live there.
Yeah, that would be the case. Yes, you described it really, really well. But the problem is that the RED mechanisms are not about paying for conserving forests. They are about paying countries that cut the forest, that have really high rates of deforestation. So the payments would be to give incentive to those countries to stop deforesting at such a rate. That's it, you know. It's not like the country that has more forest will benefit from this. They first have to achieve a high rate of deforestation. You know, that's the perversity of the whole thing. Yeah. So
yeah.
We don't want to give prices to those that are clearing the forests, and in the process they are violating human rights and indigenous people's rights, and again degrading the environment by expanding the agricultural frontiers or planting exotic monocultures of trees or whatever.
Right. I mean, we're already seeing in countries like the UK and in Europe that countries are keen to use things like the Clean Development Mechanism uh-huh. to buy their way out of
yes.
reducing emissions at home.
Yeah.
If forests were also brought into this kind of carbon markets, uh-huh. then that would just massively increase the opportunity for countries to buy their way out of actually making cuts in the rich countries, yeah?
Yes, that's exactly, yes.
So but that is a fatal flaw with this kind of scheme.
Totally,
yeah.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. And the thing is that countries already agreed to protect forests through Article 4.1d of this convention, of the Climate Change Convention. They accepted the responsibility, common but differentiated, as they say in UN jargon, but that means that they just got to do it. And if they know a little bit of the carbon cycle, they know that forests, besides sequestering carbon, they give an awful lot of environmental stability to the whole biosphere. The climatic stability is directly linked mainly to oceans and forests. So this is what they need to be protecting, and they are obliged already. They don't need any more incentives. You see, this arbitrary link they made, let's say pressured by the U.S. in the late 90s to negotiate the Kyoto Protocol, is what completely derailed this convention. So every single effort any sector is to make needs to be compensated for, and that's just not right. because we should apply the Rio principles, and one of them is that the polluter pays. Whomever is causing the will happen to you. If you park your car in on the wrong place, you'll end up paying for it, paying a fine at least, right? So this is the kind of things that corporations are to be exonerated from, and that's just not right.
The other thing that seems to be, you know, a really big flaw with this whole idea is that it doesn't deal with the things that are driving deforestation.
Yes.
Which presumably are things like soybeans for cattle feed.
Yep.
And agrofuels as well is causing a lot of deforestation.
Absolutely.
So if you're paying to supposedly conserve forests, then if you're not dealing with the demand, that it's going to be fulfilled somewhere else.
Absolutely. That's going to have a huge leakage effect.
Right.
You will protect something, and that, let's say, the need for the soil will go and look somewhere else, and it'll just carve on other forests. But the thing is that the RED mechanism is not about protecting forests. It's about stopping deforestation in the countries that have high rates of deforestation. That's one thing we really have to understand. But governments are quite incoherent on these policies, because on one hand, they promote the use of agrofuels, for instance, in the EU. They have very, very ambitious targets. So that will cause the expansion of the agricultural frontier in countries like Brazil, Bolivia, Paraguay, Argentina. And that, in turn, will create many more emissions than the ones being absorbed by the whole strategy. That's one thing. And secondly is that there is no limitation in how much oil you use, oil or gas or coal. So a company that is cutting emissions through using biofuels, agrofuels in Europe, will definitely have enough money to invest in other businesses in developing countries that will definitely use the cheapest fuels. And that then will be, again, having resulting emissions from the use of those in the atmosphere, which is one and global. So it's not really helping us to cut emissions.
So have the Global Forest Coalition been putting forward alternative suggestions that might help with the issue of deforestation?
Yes, definitely. And if you look at a map and you see all the best preserved areas in the planet, they are indigenous peoples' areas. And once the indigenous peoples are evicted from those lands, then deforestation starts rising. So what we definitely need is to start by linking these processes to indigenous peoples' territorial rights. That's one thing. Then the other way forward we propose is to restore degraded forests, with understanding by restoration to recover the forest on its original stage. And that is possible because in most areas of the world, the impulse that created those forests in the first place are still around. So they can again recreate and be fully functional in a number of years if we apply, first of all, protect the areas, set them aside or help them to recover through traditional knowledge, and especially reserving them to traditional use by the indigenous peoples of the area. And we're really talking about a lot of land here. We're not talking only about the places like Argentina or Paraguay or Uruguay, where most of the indigenous peoples were wiped out. We're talking about places like Asia, Indonesia, India, where the indigenous peoples really had their presence in really large areas. We would be inclined to say that at least 300 million hectares are directly linked to indigenous territories and indigenous claims. So that's like a very, very big area, and that's an awful lot of forest that can be restored in those areas.
What is the status of the current discussions on the REDD?
Actually, they are meeting at this very moment, but until today, 5 o'clock, we basically had a completely empty document that, first of all, excluded all references to indigenous peoples. had very, very poor links to the environmental interests we have. Like, there's no mention of reforestation, there's no mention of reducing deforestation in particular areas. So it's basically just a very empty vision of a business plan.
I mean, why do you think that, you know, such a bad scheme is gaining so much momentum?
Because there's a lot of money to make out of this. If you have a product which is from bad to mediocre, but you have a very good sales strategy, you can still get away with making a lot of money. So this is exactly what's going on. It's a proposition based on a few very well-sounding sales pitches, but then there's basically an awful lot of problems with the way it will function. But they don't want to know about that because they realize that developed countries and the consultants and companies interested in reducing emissions this way, realize that they can get away with it. Just they can sell it by having a very, very good window dressing strategy.
That was Miguel Lavera, chair of the Global Forest Coalition. At the same time as delegates in Poznan were trying to work out how to stabilize the climate by reducing deforestation, European country delegates in Brussels were agreeing targets for biofuels which will increase deforestation. I spoke to Robert Bailey of Oxfam International in Oxford.
I understand that today there's been some kind of agreement on the text of this EU package, which includes the targets on biofuels. Has what Oxfam International has been asking for been satisfactorily dealt with in that draft text?
Well, we haven't actually seen the final text yet, but what our sources tell us is that pretty much none of the things that we have been asking for have been included. So, for example, we asked for the 10% target to be scrapped or at least reduced, and that's not happened. So the member states have gone back on what the Parliament recommended. The Parliament recommended that we should have a 6% sub-target for biofuels and the remaining 4% should come from other sources such as electric cars. But the member states have scrapped that proposal. The member states have also taken out all reference to social standards, so sustainability standards to protect poor people's human rights and land rights. So, for example, now it will be perfectly acceptable for biofuels to be used and subsidised in the European Union that have been produced at the expense of human rights, of labour rights, or have been produced on land stolen from indigenous people, for example.
And there are lots of examples of land grabs going on already. Biofuels.
We're investigating a number of cases in Southern Africa. We included a report on an example in Tanzania in our last report, Another Inconvenient Truth. In the report before that, Biofueling Poverty, we gave examples of land grabs and human rights abuses in Indonesia relating to palm oil. There are numerous examples of human rights abuses and abuses of international labour standards in the production of sugarcane ethanol in Brazil, for example. So it's well documented that these things go on, and it's not that they're unique to biofuels. They're a problem in global agriculture in general, but the key point is that what is being proposed under EU legislation is that we as taxpayers will subsidise biofuels to the tune of billions and billions of euros every year on the basis that they are sustainable. But in actual fact, it will be perfectly possible for them to be produced using slave labour, for example, or child labour. So I don't think these biofuels are going to be in any way sustainable.
Right. I mean, Oxfam International is a development charity, and presumably you think that this is not going to help in terms of development, and this is why you're campaigning on it, and presumably it's going to continue to impact on food prices and hunger.
Yes, absolutely. The food price spike that happened at the end of last year and the first half of this year is estimated to have pushed 100 million people into poverty and cost developing countries about $300 billion in the space of 1 year. That's three times what they received in aid. Now, the role of biofuels in that price spike is hotly contested, but if you look at the estimates of, you know, impartial, credible global organisations such as the IMF, the International Food Policy Research Institute and the World Bank, biofuels have played a very significant part in that price rise. We think they probably explain about 30% of it. And what this EU target is doing, it's just going to mean that these sorts of patterns carry on. So it's potentially going to be disastrous for literally millions of poor people trying to survive on $1 a day or less around the world.
I mean, what seems hugely ironic to me is that right now people are meeting in Poznan, Poland at the UN climate talks, and really the big issue on the table is how to include forestry and to try and reduce deforestation, because it's such a big source of climate change emissions. And I think it's something like 18% of annual global emissions currently. But at the same time, an increase in targets for biofuels at the EU, you're saying it's from an increase from 6 to 10%, is that correct?
Yeah.
Is going to increase deforestation and other changes in land use which will contribute to global warming.
Yeah, there's no doubt at all that the EU 10% biofuel target is going to be disastrous for global forestry and for climate change. And that's going to happen through two effects. One is that we're going to produce, you know, more and more palm oil and more soy oil to use for biodiesel in the European Union, and both of these feedstocks are often grown on recently deforested land. But the other problem, which is much harder to deal with within any sustainability framework, is that this process can happen indirectly. So by increasing aggregate demand for edible oils and pushing up the prices of things like palm oil and soy oil, we send a price signal to palm oil and soy oil producers all around the world to expand production, whether it's for biofuels or for food or whatever the use is. You know, the market signal works in the same way, and it's impossible to control this within the EU sustainability scheme, which is another thing that we had asked for to be included and hasn't been included at the moment. We asked for the emissions from indirect land use change to be included in the greenhouse gas calculations for biofuels, but that's not been included either. And instead, what's proposed, as I understand it, is that the Commission will produce some kind of proposal on how to monitor, measure and manage indirect land use change. But given that the European Commission has been in complete denial that this problem even exists for the last year, I have very little faith that they're going to come up with a sensible proposal on this.
Right. I mean, what is the procedure at this point with all this legislation? And can anything be done at this late stage to kind of improve things?
The procedure at the moment is that the deal which has been agreed between the Parliament and the Council will be rubber stamped at the EU summit at the end of this week, and then it will be ratified by a vote in the European Parliament, I believe, in mid-December, I think on December the 17th. And really, these two rubber stamping processes are just formalities. You know, the content has been agreed in principle and is very unlikely to change. So it pains me to say it, but I think there's very little left that can be done.
Why do you think this reversal has been made? Was it the European Parliament originally that suggested that these targets shouldn't be increased? And this also seems to be happening in the face of all the evidence which points to the contrary, that this is a really bad idea.
Yeah, the European Parliament originally made a set of proposals and voted on a set of proposals to improve the European Commission's legislative proposals. So the European Parliament proposed, for example, to reduce the 10% target from 6%. They proposed to include social standards in the sustainability schemes. They proposed a mechanism by which indirect land use change effects could be measured and managed. They proposed to increase minimum greenhouse gas savings thresholds. So they made lots of very progressive proposals, which the Council, the Member States, have chosen to ignore and throw out. And the reason for that is simply because Member States have been acting to protect their domestic, industrial and agricultural interests. So the biofuels target and all the subsidies that go with it represent a huge pork barrel for industry and farmers. And these industrial and agricultural lobbies are very powerful with their national governments. So really, this policy has absolutely nothing to do with climate change and has everything to do with supporting domestic interest groups, I'm afraid.
And it flies in the face of a petition earlier this year calling for a moratorium and an end to EU biofuels targets and subsidies,
yeah.
signed by about 200 different organisations.
Yeah.
So it's completely against what civil society
is asking for. It's completely against the interests of taxpayers, because taxpayers are going to be subsidising these things to the tune of billions and billions and billions of dollars a year and being told that they're sustainable when they're not. It's completely against the interests of climate change and the environment, because it's going to force expansion of agriculture into forests and wetlands and critical carbon sinks. And it's completely against the interests of poor people the world over who are facing and growing food insecurity and may be forced off their land to make way for biofuel plantations. The only sectoral interest groups that this is in the interests of are European agricultural and industrial lobby groups.
That was Robert Bailey, Oxfam International's biofuel advisor. And on that note, it's fitting to announce that earlier this week, the agrofuels lobby were outright winners in the annual Worst EU Lobbying Awards, receiving over 50% of the 8,500 votes. And in Poznan, the influence of profit-driven corporate lobby groups seems to be effectively hoodwinking delegates who appear deaf to the urgent signal of the climate science and to the pleas of civil society groups. The International Emissions Trading Association is the largest non-governmental organisation at the UN talks, and its members, according to The Guardian, include all the world's largest oil, car, steel, cement and power companies, and nearly every one of the major banks that fueled the present financial crisis. We'll be back next week with our final show in the series, when we'll be speaking to a range of people to get assessments of the final outcomes of the Poznan UN climate change talks. For references related to this week's programme, or to hear the show again, go to the Climate Radio archive at climateradio.co.uk. We're going to leave you with the voice of 21-year-old Lily Kember, interviewed by the BBC. Kember was one of 57 activists who broke into London's Stansted Airport earlier this week and surrounded themselves with security fencing, shutting down the airport for 3 hours in protest at the UK government's commitment to a massive programme of aviation expansion. Thanks for listening.
We're taking direct action because we think people need to take responsibility. You know, we've tried marches, we've tried petitions, we've tried writing to our MPs, nothing is working. Now, I've grown up with the rhetoric of climate change. I've heard politicians talking about this for years, and I have yet to see any evidence that they're actually taking action on this potential catastrophe. The expansion of the airport is our primary concern at the moment, you know. It's not in line with the government's plans. They're being hypocritical. Aircraft are the most unsustainable form of transport. There's plenty of other sort of varieties, you know, trains, buses, that sort of thing that's not being utilised to its full potential. We're incredibly apologetic that this is affecting these people on this sort of level, but, you know, climate change is going to affect everyone. It's going to be a global problem, and we have to face up to that. Nobody's taking the action that's necessary to be taken to face that. It's going to affect hundreds of millions of people's lives.